serious.
I call this meeting to order the Personnel, Legislative, and Public Affairs Subcommittee. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. And prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that we'll use for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. With that, we have a quorum call, please.
Present.
Here.
Hornet.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
The adoption of the agenda.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I have a proof of publication of the meeting notice here, and it's also posted in the back, I believe. So, the first item on the agenda is the amendments to the Papio NRD's 2023 Pay Program Administrative Manual. So, we'll talk. We've got Jean Tate and Ashley Tamala from Silverstone.
Good afternoon, everyone. Ashley and I are here to present the proposed updates to the Papio NRD's Pay Program Administration Manual for 2023. The pay manual has incorporated changes to the base pay structure as recommended and supported by Silverstone Group's Annual Compensation Planning Bulletin and the 2023 World at Work Survey. These changes include a 2.5% increase to the base pay structure, a 0.5% increase to the merit increase matrix, and a proposed cost of living adjustment of 1.5%. Last year, the board approved a 2% increase to the pay structure and a cost of living adjustment of 1.6%. District employees received an average pay increase of 5% in 2022. Factors impacting an employee's pay increase includes their annual performance rating and the relationship to the market based on the pay structure. The district's employee reward strategy is designed to compensate performance, equitability, and comparatively with a major goal to motivate employees to perform their best and to reward excellence. A redline version of the proposed changes to the 2023 Pay Program Administration Manual is attached in your book under tab 6 for your review, and Ashley and I would be happy to entertain any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you. Is there any input from the public?
I move for staff recommendation.
Okay, let's do that first. Director Thompson, thank you.
Second.
And a second, thank you. Okay, now, is there an input from the public that would like to talk about this? Directors? Director McCormick.
Do you have a projection for what the average increase will be? I know that we move people up the scale, and is there a projection? Last year was 5%.
Well, we were looking just out in the hallway as far as...
Would you...
Okay. So we were looking at the pay structure and the 1.5% cost of living adjustment and the 0.5% merit. And so it could be between 6 and 7%.
Because of?
The changes. The recommended, the proposed changes.
So it could be a 6 to 7% increase.
And the variability there, the range, is because the, as you see from the merit increase matrix, there's variability in the merit increase based on the person's performance and where they're currently at in their pay range. So that is why there is a range. We can't just say that it is set number. So that's the estimate, though, 6 to 7%.
I'm asking.
Historically, what has been the movement in the merit scale?
In the merit scale, there has not historically been movement. The merit scale has remained constant.
Of the staff, has the staff steadily moved up the merit scale as a percentage?
Next slide. We're taking a look. I'm going to show you two more pages. I'm going to show you the relationship to market chart. Yep, right there.
There we go.
Okay, so when an individual is hired, they start somewhere on this chart for evaluation purposes. We have the 80% of midpoint for the pay structure. We have the midpoint of 100%, and then we show 120% of the salary grade for each position the district has for every job description. So if someone is hired at, let's just say, 85%, and they far exceed expectations in that first reporting period at 6 months, on this chart for 2023, they would be receiving a 4% pay increase with the additional 1.5% cost of living. So that would be a 5.5% pay increase. The change to the structure lowers, and their percentage to midpoint lowers as well. So that also can be a variable as far as where they fall on that relationship to market. So let's just say someone comes in, 80% of their midpoint, they far exceed expectations, and we approve this. The pay structure has increased by 2.5%, which is going to show that they are lower now than the 80% of the midpoint when they were hired, in which case they would get a 4.5% pay increase in addition to a 1.5% cost of living, which would be a 6% pay increase. And it's different for every individual because assessments are made at the time of interviews and hire at what we should be bringing the individuals in. Sometimes they have a lot of experience in certain areas, so that causes a variable. Everyone does not start at 80%. They can start at 80% or maybe even 90%. So they're variable, so I can't exactly tell you this is exactly what someone's going to be. That 5% was the combination of all the employees that we had here and what the overall average was.
Historically, in recent history, has everyone moved up the merit scale, or has it been a pretty much stagnant?
Are you asking regarding their performance rating?
Yes.
Up their, right. Their performance?
I would say that they either stay the same or they move
pretty steady.
Up. Now, if there's a situation where someone doesn't meet expectations or there is perhaps a delay for the evaluation so that corrective actions can be implemented to, you know, as a performance improvement plan, then there might be a delay. But it's the majority of the time, 99% of the time, individuals are progressing and moving up.
Tim, the average has been 3 to 4% over the previous years. So if you take out the cost of living increase, which you did last year, then that's about what the average has been since.
For the staff in general.
Yeah, so it's 3, yep. 3.5, or depending on their rating. So we went to that performance-based rating. The state has even gone now, finally caught up to us, and they've gone to the performance-based rating. And then also the board gave the authority to give someone an additional 1% if they're really high achieving and they've done so not just in 1 year but over consecutive years. So you could get a 5-6% increase, and I could add on to that, and that puts you up another percent. So I've done that before. I've rejected them before. So that is within my purview to do that.
One thing that I think is worth noting as well, historically, the recommendations have been around two things. One is that pay structure adjustment. So by what fixed percent do we adjust the pay ranges upwards? The other number that we typically look at is the merit increase average, and then that COLA. So last year we had the recommendation of the pay structure adjustment and then that cost of living adjustment. One thing that I think is worth noting here is that this year we do have a third additional recommendation, and that is to adjust the matrix that you see on the screen, adjust that matrix up by 0.5% for all of those numbers. And the reason for that is we are seeing an uptick in the market with merit increases. There was an uptick in the market, in the Nebraska market, I should say, of 0.6%. So we wanted to make sure we were also factoring that into the recommendations as well. So we have a third new component for this year's recommendations because we are seeing more organizations granting higher merit increases to their employees because of that need to retain good employees in a very competitive market where it might be harder to bring people in from the outside. So again, focusing on the importance of rewarding current employees who are meeting performance expectations. So just wanted to call attention to that. There are three recommendations here, whereas in years past we were focusing on the two.
Okay. Are there any other questions for other directors? Director Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you're with Silverstone?
Yes.
And are there alternatives, or did you consider alternatives? Every time you increase a workforce's base pay, you also just increase how much they send off to the federal government and the state government. So if most of our employees, and you look at them, they're about 27% tax bracket, 5.5-6% state, that's 33%. So every dollar we throw into payroll, you're losing a third just to taxes. And I like to see an alternative solution. Is it possible, instead of going for these big increases, it's not a huge increase, but it's pretty sizable, just increase the size of our retirement plan contributions while our workforce is still fairly young? That would have a massive positive impact on their overall wealth plan. Maybe you have something to speak to on that one, Director Spinski. But did you consider that, or would that have been an option?
It's not an option.
So Silverstone is just the firm that we use to, as far as compare the salaries in the public and private sector. Anything with retirement has to go through the NARD. And we are part of the NARD risk pool, which means all 23 NRDs have to agree. So if we're talking about increasing retirement benefits, like contributions, then we have to go through that mechanism to do that.
That's for the pool. And, you know, I came to you earlier talking about these issues. That's what my question to you a couple months back was, are we precluded from setting up our own plan, separate plan, and matching the employees?
That's something that we have to explore, but we don't have that capability.
So then you have 100% of the money going into their overall wealth plan, including what would have been going to Texas.
We do have a 457 plan that we make available to any of our employees that wish to participate. It is not with matching funds, but they can put in whatever they need up to the maximum amount that they're eligible to contribute. And it comes out through payroll deduction, and it is pre-taxed. So for the employees that are participating in that, they are saving some of those taxable incomes that you just referred to.
And we're having a difficult participation in that plan as well. So we've been touting that as an option for them.
That's probably another conversation. If we were having difficulty, I'd be interested to see how the performance is or why people are reluctant to participate in that plan. All right. Thank you.
John, do we have the ability to match in the 457 at this time?
Not at this time.
Okay.
A 457, though, you could add a 401A and match. Isn't that correct?
I don't know. I would have to consult with the NARD on that. I know that we match the 5.5% is mandatory, and the district matches 6%. So employee 5.5, we match up to 6.
Director McCormick, you have another question?
Before you finish.
Thank you.
So Silverstone evaluates the entire package
or just the salaries. And so if we could have this benefit package that doesn't affect total compensation.
We evaluate base pay practices.
Period.
Yes.
Not, and do we have the Cadillac of benefit packages, or is it mid-sized?
In my opinion, you can ask 50 different people, and you can get 50 different opinions of it.
That's why we'd have an expert that would look at that.
Okay. Director Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was wondering, when we vote on these pay raises, and I'm not voting today, but will in the general meeting, and I'm alluding that I'm approving on Thursday for this, but do we have to do it in December? And what I'm getting at, can we vote on these pay raises in any other time of the year? And for example, I told my students, watch that the meeting after the election, MUD will raise your rates. They won't say a peep or OPPD. And sure enough, right after the election, the first meeting, MUD jacked everybody's rates. And my students were like, yeah, how did you, it's like clockwork. So I don't know if this, what we do here, right after the election, we raise our employees' salary. Do we have to do it in December, or is it just fit with January or, you know, tax purposes, that kind of thing?
Larry, we do our final employee evaluation in December. So employees are evaluated depending on when they are hired throughout the year. We complete them in December. Then Gene submits all the information to the NARD, to the insurance, to everybody. And so we run on a calendar year for approving. Now, no one will receive a pay increase until they have their evaluation throughout the year. So it's not like whatever you approve, it doesn't just automatically everybody gets it. They have to go through the evaluation process. So this is going to continue from January all the way until next December, and then we'll start all over again. So that's why we approve it in December. So we have employees that have evaluations in January, then we can implement those and influence their raises.
The information is also utilized by Barrett Home. You'll see Kelly Lawrence will be here in January to brief the affirmative action, and they do assessments as far as pay equity across the board for all the employees in every field office. So that's another reason why we do it on the calendar year. And we set that specifically 7 years ago when we first started the affirmative action. She's like, you need to give us a date that we're going to be consistent with when it comes to the reporting. And we chose January 1st to the end of December.
Actually, I had a question also.
Sure.
I read the paper, and that Social Security increases go up 8.7%. And the Consumer Price Index that came out in July was like 9.1%. And the increases that you were showing that you're recommending are certainly below that. Have you seen any peer companies to us even give like sometimes a one-time inflation adjustment bonus?
We have seen some local organizations do that. We saw some of that in July where some organizations did structure adjustments mid-year. We are seeing some organizations on top of merit increase recommendations, pay structure adjustments. We are seeing some grant additional cost of living increases as well. So when we think about, there's a distinction. There's cost of labor and cost of living. Cost of labor is focused on what is the going market rate for a job. Cost of living is obviously more focused on a market basket of goods and what you're paying for goods and services. So we are seeing with compensation rates trailing inflation, employees do have decreased purchasing power right now. So we are seeing some organizations that are granting beyond their merit increase an even greater cost of living adjustment. One thing that I think is important to keep in mind, though, is that, you know, what is your compensation philosophy and strategy? Are you focused on market competitive compensation, or are you focused on purchasing power? Those are two very different things, or perhaps some combination thereof. So again, it's all about what is your strategy and your philosophy. So again, with our recommendations, it does incorporate that cost of living adjustment that we are seeing based on the local Nebraska data. you know, that is trailing the overall CPI, though, when you do look at that number that you shared.
I guess the question I have, yeah, what I was just asking about was like a one-time thing. It's not necessarily, it's not attached to their salary structure. It's just a one-time bridge-type bonus to help with inflationary pressures that everybody's feeling. So
we have seen some of our clients do that, yes. Rather than tacking on an increased fixed percent
right.
that you're going to have to pay again, you know,
right.
next year and
this
so
is a
on,
one-time thing.
We have seen a one-time thing. It's not as common from local clients. We have seen a couple do it, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you, clients that, or maybe perhaps not clients, but prospective clients, organizations that are having more challenges in this area are those that are not doing their regular market reviews. They're not doing regular pay structure adjustments. So our clients that are keeping track of market on a regular basis, those that are making annual reviews and adjustments, those clients are faring better than those that perhaps aren't doing their due diligence on a regular
mm-hmm.
basis and are trying to play catch up right now.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody, yeah, Director Thompson.
A couple of things on that line too. On Thursday we'll be awarding service awards. Is there some, don't we include some compensation for years of service?
Mm-hmm. So, it's just a one time thing.
Yeah, it's a one time. That's not really tied to this, but it's as an employee works 5 years, 10 years, and so on. There is a carrot at the end of the stick mm-hmm. for that. So and there's a long time. There's a lot of long-time employees. And secondly, on Patrick's question about setting up a separate retirement system, the NARD has done a great job of this. And what you're proposing might be legally possible, but my question is why? What benefit would we have, this PAPIO, to establish a separate thing that the administration of that, and I'm looking at Gene Tate or others involved, just to set up that sort of thing when it's done very well down in Lincoln. Since it's the second time you brought it up, obviously it's a concern of yours, but I don't think it's broke enough to really divert from status quo in that regard. I mean, Rich has been sitting as our representative in the risk pool, and if you want to add anything or not, I mean, it's I don't know how many employees in the entire system, 23 NRDs times whatever, so that's a good pool. For us to break away from that, I think is complicated, but not saying we shouldn't talk about it, but at this point, it's probably still a discussion item.
If I may?
I think Director Sabinski wanted to jump in, too.
Jim, I'm not entirely sure what Patrick has in mind, but you know, in the case of the 457, no one participates. If you put a small match on there, you get a lot more participation. So I agree that the NARD risk pool and all that setup is really, really good. However, to incent more investment in retirement, to give them a little more carrot, yeah, that's what firefighters do, police do. Almost every municipality has some sort of a match on the 457. So something to think about, I think.
I appreciate your comments, too. And at the time, I wasn't anticipating the IRS moving the tax brackets as they did. They've since adjusted those upwards. So the problem that I was predicting that our employees would foresee here at the end of the year is alleviated.
Okay. Any other questions?
All right.
I can pursue. We can pursue the 457. If that's of interest, we can pursue how to match it. If you're interested in doing that, we could put proposals together if that's something you would like to do.
Maybe we put a questionnaire out to the employees and see what they think if we match it.
Sure.
One other thing I would like to bring up, and also, if we did go, in fact, I'll make this in the form of a motion, see if we get a second. I would like to get a $1,000 inflationary bonus to each full-time employee. That would be about $48,000, which comes out to less than 0.1% of our budget overall. And it's a one-time thing. It's a bridge thing to help help deal with the inflationary pressures that we're getting, and I would make that in the form of a motion.
Clarification, Chairman, is that an amendment to the motion on the table?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it has to be amended.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a motion on the floor. I would second it.
Okay, moved and seconded. Is there any other discussion on that? And it's just open for discussion for everybody here. What? So, yes.
On a side note, I would like to see some expert analysis of the entire package in the future. That's all.
Okay. That's what Ashley's here for. Also.
We can pull in our employee benefits.
Excuse me?
We can pull in our employee benefits colleagues to do a comprehensive benefits analysis.
That would
to
be
understand.
For the general manager to decide. I'd like to see that.
Director Davison.
Yeah, Ted, I'm all for your motion, but is that something that you would just be a one-time payment maybe in January? Or?
Well, that's what the accounting people would have to work that out. It's just a one-time event.
But just a one-time payment.
It doesn't add to their salary structure or anything. It's a one-time inflationary bonus just to deal with the inflation that we're experiencing. As I said, it's less than one-tenth of 1% of our budget. It's 0.000666 approximately.
What would their taxes on that be? Would they have to be a tele?
Well, I guess if I were an employee, I'd rather have $1,000 and pay the tax on it than not have $1,000.
Yeah, so you pay the taxes and then obviously retirement would come from that as well. I don't know, each individual employee is obviously different depending on what state claims, dependents, things like that. And then I don't know if there's any suggestion of, so obviously we didn't budget for this,
yeah. So
we'll have to find it. So, I mean, we can do that. I didn't know if anyone had a suggestion of where we take it or, but I guess we could, if you leave it up to us, we can find it.
We'll figure it out, right?
Well, I mean, we can find it if you approve it.
All right. Are there, Director Thompson?
I'm not in favor of it. Sorry, employees, don't call me a Grinch if you want to. Go ahead. Present package that we're looking at an okay increase, and the administration of a one-time bonus. It seems, especially from the outside, you're giving another bonus on top, and only $1,000 for a highly paid employee. It's good. Lower paid employee, it's a bigger thing. So it's not fairly equitable, if you will, based on the position in the organization. So that brings to mind why he get $1,000. He can certainly doesn't need it, whereas a lower paid employee might. I think that presents all sorts of problems.
So. Duly noted, Director Bennett.
So just by way of the practice or the procedures of these types of bonuses is they usually are proposed right at the tail end of the year after an election or just before an election, as we've seen here in the last couple of years in Omaha.
I'm not up for election.
But then there's a race to get it in and get it paid before Christmas. And we don't just have an employee that's going to pay tax on $1,000. It's an employee that's going to receive $1,000 that's going to be added to their overall income. And for want of $1,000, you might be jumping an employee from 12% to 22%. So that's the tax bracket jump. And then to 24 and then higher. It just goes high. So you just have to be cautious about when you heave a bonus on these employees, because you could actually cause an end-of-the-year problem. They might have their plan all in place.
Sure.
But then $1,000 probably won't do it this go-around.
I would take it.
We can make it optional. You can not. You don't have to take it.
Or you could make it optional as when to take it.
You don't want it. You don't have to take it. So, my opinion.
You want to take it now or versus after the new year?
This discussion about how it affects tax brackets, that's not our purview. I don't really care about that. It's a budget item. We're administering the whole budget. However it falls on an employee, yes, they'll pay taxes. We'll take deductions like you ordinarily would, but I think it just reflects there's a big company, we got money, we got taxpayer money, here's a bonus for you because it's Christmas time. Now, it's based on inflation, excuse me, Director Jeff, but I don't sense, and of course I don't know all the employees, that it's absolutely necessary. I'm done.
Okay. Director McCormick.
I respectfully disagree that we're in an inflationary environment somewhere between 7 and 8%, and we're having a wage increase and a merit increase and everything, a package increase of 6 to 7. I don't think a $1,000 bonus is out of line.
Any other questions from directors? Can we If not, let's have a roll call on that motion.
Can we have a, what we're actually voting on now? We okay. talked a lot here tonight, excluding we'll call
on
insurance.
We'll roll call on the amendment.
I can go ahead and read it. So our recommendation is that the subcommittee recommends to the Board of Directors that the proposed amendments to the PAPU-NRD's Pay Program Administration Manual for 2023 be approved, and that a one-time inflationary bonus of $1,000 per employee effective, I don't know if you want to have the date being January 1st.
Point of order. That motion was on the table. You offered an amendment. We'll be voting on the amendment to add the $1,000.
To add to this. Yes. Okay. So we have to vote on the amendment first?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. No.
Fowler?
I'm getting confused now. Was this for the...
This is to approve the amendment.
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
And Chairman?
Yes.
Passes?
So the amendment passes, now we vote.
Now you vote on the motion as amended.
Correct.
Incorrect.
McCormick?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Let's move on then. Amendments to the PAPU-NRD's 2023 Employee Handbook. John Winkler and Jean Tate.
Hello again. So this year we are providing just a couple of changes to the Employee Handbook for 2023. Changes include adding the hours of operation for the Operation and Maintenance Headquarters. We are updating our bad weather closing. We're changing the procedures that are going to be used to notify staff of delayed opening via a text group by management. Before, we were following Millard Public Schools schedule, and now that they're doing remote learning, that really doesn't apply to our bad weather closing anymore. And then for long-term disability, we're recommending that we reduce the amount of time the district will provide medical and dental insurance coverage for an employee that's approved for long-term disability from 2 years to 1 year. Part of the reason for that is that in July, the NARD risk pool is has been working with the Hartford to increase the monthly payout for long-term disability up to $10,000. And prior to that, it was $3,000. So administratively, we just thought it would be a good move for the district. It will save us, you know, several tens of thousands of dollars per year. So the recommendation is that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the proposed amendments to the PAPU-NRD's 2023 Employee Handbook be approved and incorporated to the district's policy manual.
Motion on the floor?
Second.
All right. Is there any input from the public on this? Directors, any questions? Director Bonnet?
Could you give us a little better explanation there as to how this would tie in with the NARD?
The long-term disability?
Yeah, they're creating
managed.
A new...
It's managed. The long-term disability is through the Hartford, and it is managed and overseen by the NARD.
So we'll end up with their with the plan that they come up with?
We will. It will be adopted by the NARD Risk Pool Board.
We already have the plan.
So this is just cleaning up the language.
Yeah. Okay. And again, it updated. When we updated it from 3,000 to 10,000, it was to kind of current standards of 3,000 was ancient. And then the 2 years to 1 year, that's not industry standard anymore. Actually, it's 1 year. So we had an additional, it was too long. And so you're looking at $50,000, $60,000 for one person adding that additional year. So now we're all up into current industry standards.
Any other questions? If not, roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Burnett?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you.
That concludes my portion of this.
Before we start the programs, project, and operations, does anyone need to take a break before we go into another meeting? Not. I'd like to call the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee meeting December 6, 2022. Notification of the Open Meetings Act. Copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska's revised statute 84-1407 through 84-1414, is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Fowler?
Here.
Jack?
Here.
Dazer?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
Chairman?
Here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda. Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Dazer?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Item number five, proof of publication meeting notes. We have publication of tonight's meeting will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, amendment four with Shimmer for Platte River Bridge Trail. Eric Williams.
Good afternoon, everyone. The Platte River Bridge Trail is over the Platte River between Bellevue and Plattsmith. Page two has a map, which I think will be helpful. We've talked about this project several times over recent years. This is a collaboration between several local agencies, and it has federal funding, and it's to construct the bridge and short sections of trails on the east side of the northbound lanes. The design is nearly finished. During the PS&E final design submittal to NDOT, there's a step for a right-of-way certification from the Department of Transportation. During that review, NDOT submitted comments about what would generally be considered functional design questions that were not previously submitted in any of the previous reviews. That triggers a change in the design of the trail on the north side of the Platte River. On the east side of Highway 75, if you scroll up just a little bit, the north section up pointed toward Allied Road. This will require an elevation of the trail surface about 2 feet, an extension of the retaining wall, and the addition of some new drainage structures to capture water from the edge of the highway before it gets to the trail, under the trail, and through the retaining wall. That comment was submitted by NDOT in order to obtain the right-of-way certification because this project is in the Department of Transportation right-of-way for the highway. The design team put together an adjustment to their scope and the fee. That's attached for your review. The additional changes in the design work are estimated to cost $44,087.24, and that's summarized on the last page of your attachment. The scope of work is listed there as well. And so this would be amendment number four to the design contract with Shimmer. It is our understanding that with these changes to the plans, the right-of-way certification will be approved, and the project will go to the PS&E process and be ready for bidding. We've been working toward that for quite a while, and so we hope that with these final changes, NDOT will help us get this project ready for bid. Probably in March or April of 23 now is about the timeline based on the extended work here. But the recommendation is to amend the contract with Shimmer for these additional design services related to the comments from NDOT to have the plans ready for bidding and then have the project under construction in 23 and probably into 2024. As a reminder, this project has 80% federal funding, and the 20% local funding is shared between six agencies. So there would be a small increase to the NRD on our contribution to the project, with most of the funding coming from federal funding. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Thanks.
Move to staff recommendation. Second.
Is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Caesar?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Thanks, Eric. Item number seven, Waster Creek Mitigation Credit Crisis. Ian?
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. So the subject of this agenda item is the wetland and stream credit prices at the Glacier Creek Mitigation Bank. A brief overview of the Wetland and Stream Mitigation Banking Program for anyone who may not be familiar. The program is one that has been around at the district for quite some time, and allows for the use of credits to mitigate for adverse impacts to wetlands and streams at project sites. These credits can be used by the district or sold to constituents within a specified service area. Those constituents can be other public agencies or private entities who may need to mitigate at their project sites. If we jump to page 3, that service area is shown in Exhibit 1, just for your reference. The service area is roughly based on the Big Papio and Mosquito watershed and the boundaries of the district. So the Wetland and Stream Mitigation Banking Program is coordinated with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, who does a lot of the regulatory administration. But the district is responsible for constructing and maintaining the sites, setting a price for the credits to be sold, and maintaining a ledger of the total balance of credits as they are utilized or sold by the entities who may purchase them or the district itself. The last time mitigation credits were held by the district was in 2007 as part of the Rumsey Station Bank, so it's been quite some time. But excitingly, we are nearing completion of the Glacier Creek Mitigation Bank, expecting it to be done in the spring of next year. And so a price needs to be set for both the stream credits at that site and the wetland credits. In the past, the district procedure for setting price for wetland and stream credits has been to aim to recoup the project cost and provide some return, with the intent being that the capital raised from the sale of the credits would be utilized in future mitigation projects to continue to provide the same service to constituents through that mitigation banking program. I think at this point, jumping to the second page and looking at the tables would be beneficial. So the proposed prices for the Glacier Creek wetland credits and the stream credits is based on that same rationale of trying to recoup project cost and provide a certain level of return. On table 2, you can see what that price breakdown is. There are going to be 19.12 wetland credits. The proposed price is $100,000 per credit. For the stream credits, there are 36,859 credits with a proposed price of $97 per credit. The total value of all those credits, if they were to be sold, would be roughly $5.5 million. The Glacier Creek project's total cost was about $4.8 million, and so that results in a roughly 15% return on the cost of that project. In addition to looking at a multiplier for the project, we also compared to the prices of credits in other mitigation banks and other service areas. This will be the only mitigation bank open for sale in our service area, so we had to look elsewhere and found that these prices were comparable to those offered in others. There's quite a bit of variance to those, just depending on the date that the mitigation site was established, when the prices were set, and what the goal of that mitigation site might be, but we found that ours were comparable. We also looked at the cost of on-site mitigation, which is what these credits would seek to replace in a project, trying to understand how much it would cost to mitigate for the impact to 1 acre of wetland, which is equivalent to one credit of wetland. We also found that the prices were comparable there within a certain degree of confidence. So with that being said, I'd be happy to answer any questions about the Glacier Creek project, the Wetland Mitigation Banking Program, or about the prices proposed here. And the recommendation would be to set and sell the wetland credits and the stream credits at these prices.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you.
Anyone else making a presentation? If not, we can have a staff recommendation, approval of staff recommendation.
I'll move for staff recommendation.
Motion. That was second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
I just have one quick question.
Yep.
How much demand is there for wetland credits like this?
There is a demand. The magnitude of the demand, difficult for me to say. I'm not sure.
We get asked probably every other month if we have any available to sell.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And we can use them as well for our projects.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Any other questions from directors?
I'd like to thank the staff for generating these wetland credits and encourage them to continue in the future. as a taxpayer, it saves us money, and it also helps development and growth.
Director Bratton?
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say, Ian, you're coming more smooth and comfortable in your position.
Thank you. I appreciate that comment.
But I guess sort of Director Jett might have asked the same question. Do we know names of potential customers at this point?
We do. So an earlier memo before my time here, the first right of refusal for wetland credits was given to OPS for a middle school that they have planned at 42nd and Y Street. I think it was roughly 3.5 credits that they would need for that project. So they for sure would be interested once that amount of credits is available. Beyond that, I don't think we have anyone who's necessarily tried to reserve or had a specific project in mind. But like Amanda said, there has been a good amount of interest, so I anticipate that as they become available, we'll hear more about that.
Any other questions?
And the credit's going to be used in the Papio Basin, not the Old Corner Plant.
Yes. So Exhibit 1, can we go one more page? And then if we zoom out just a little bit. So this, that black boundary is the service area in which these credits can be used, and that would be either by us or sold to another entity. And that, like I said, that's based on a watershed boundary and then the boundaries of the district itself. So.
Questions?
Roll call. Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Chairman?
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you.
Item number 8, change order 15 with Graham Construction for Missouri River Levy Improvements. Amanda?
Good afternoon. So for consideration tonight is change order 15 with Graham Construction. This is for the big Missouri River levee improvements that we've been working on for a number of years. Lindy Rogers is here with Houston Engineering as well if you have any specific questions. So the background, this contract was let in February of 2019, right before the flood, and so there have been 14 change orders to the contract to date. A very large number of those were due to damage from the flood and changes to the plan to improve these levees because of the flood. So we, you know, there's a long history here. This is the last change order. They're intending to wrap up by mid-January. And really the major component of this change order is the railroad closure structure. And we always knew that was going to be added as a change because we had to work out the plan with the railroad and we had to then price that out with Graham. So change order 15 is just over $1.7 million. It's a large change order. About $1.4 million of that is the railroad closure structure. The remaining work is additional, you know, gate stems, grading, fencing, ramp, and cleanup work. Just a lot of things that we were seeing during the punch list that really until you saw it, we didn't know needed to be changed. So that's what's in change order 15. It takes the total contract with Graham to $28,295,434. Their initial contract was $22.8 million. So we're looking at, you know, a 24% increase in their construction contract. But again, very large project and a very long time, and a lot of massive events have happened during this. So the recommendation is to approve change order 15, the last one, we hope, with Graham Construction that takes that through the middle of January. If there's any specific questions, again, Lindy is here. She's been a part of the project the whole time, so we will try to answer them.
Thank you. We can have a recommendation on this item.
I move staff recommendation.
Got second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director Thompson, then Director Powell.
Really, the last one?
Yes.
Okay. And what was the projected date of finally wrapping this all up?
January 20th is what we have in this change order.
And we should celebrate that day.
Yes,
that's for sure.
Chairman?
Yes.
out of curiosity, what is this $1.4 million structure?
Yeah, Lindy might want to give some more details. Sure. Yeah, it's a like a permanent closure that they can put in over the tracks, but go
ahead. Lindy Rogers with Houston Engineering. The structure itself, they actually remove the railroad tracks, and they're building concrete footings underneath the railroad tracks that will be permanent structures. There's a sheet pile that goes across the entire thing. So this goes underneath the Highway 370 closures or bridge right there. And then what ends up happening is that that becomes the base for this closure structure. And during a flood scenario, columns, so they're kind of like H piles, get screwed down to that permanent footing. And then aluminum stop pile logs get slid in between those H piles in between to create a full closure that will prevent the water from entering the protected side of the levee. And as most of you know, this was probably the main area that caused the damage to Offutt Air Force Base during the 2019 flood. It poured in quick and before sandbags could be dropped in that area as well, so it's really the most critical component of this project. And, you know, we've gone back and forth a lot. We've always known that this was going to be an addition to the project because we didn't have approved plans completely from BNSF when we bid this. And I think at that point, our estimate for this construction was $1.2 million. So seeing now that we're this far into the project and there's been this much change in the construction market, to have it at $1.4 is a really good bid, in our opinion. Yes. Yep.
Any other questions?
Correct. As opposed to the 2011 flood, where they had a lot more time and they could put the sandbags in there, but in 2019 they couldn't do that. So I think $1.2 million is a very small price to pay for the damage it created. Maybe we could have saved a lot of that damage it created. So
correct.
Would we have time to install the H-pile columns?
Yes, they've shown us videos and we've talked to them in detail, and it's been used in other core districts throughout the United States as well. And it's a 2-hour time of construction. So obviously the aluminum stop logs will be stored in an area close by and they'll be deployed if we think that there's anything possibly happening. But they're really light materials, and it can. And we also built an access road out to this area that's elevated. So that was one part of the original change orders, so that we can now get to it if internal flooding has happened as well.
Lindy, where is this structure?
It's in Hayworth Park. So if you drive down Mission Drive, yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Thank you.
Right before the pay bridge.
It's the it's the bridge right before the Belvoir Bridge.
Correct. So. Yes.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Deezer?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Thank you. Again, Amanda, item 9, agreement with Lower Elkhorn and Lower Platte South NRD for river observation cameras.
Right. Okay, so maybe the map would be best, Bill, if you don't mind. So after the 2019 flood, again, there was a lot of talk amongst stakeholders about putting cameras and more gauges along the Platte River, Elkhorn River system in order to see ice moving through. It helps to be able to have that real-time visual of what's happening. So at that time, and we are a party to this this current agreement, there were cameras installed along the Platte River. They're the ones that don't have the labels on the map. But we, after 2019, I think it was in 2021, we installed cameras at Columbus, Schuyler, North Bend, Fremont, and LaShera. And we used those a lot last year. I know Director Teaser did. We used them here at the Papio all the time during ice season last year. They worked really well. The USGS is the entity that installs the equipment and maintains it and manages it, and then we have an agreement with them to help pay for that. They also help contribute to some of the cost. So after seeing how much everyone liked them last year and how well they worked, we had thought to include a couple more. These are definitely a benefit to us at the Papio. We're proposing new cameras to be added at West Point and Winslow on the Elkhorn River to help us watch that ice come through. And then we're proposing another camera at Ashland, which is kind of our, usually it's good once it gets through there. So we'd like to see that. So for your consideration tonight is also to execute an agreement with the USGS to install this camera equipment and then to maintain it for 2 years. But with that is an interlocal agreement with the Lower Platte South and the Lower Elkhorn NRDs, who also would see a benefit of these cameras. We're proposing that we split these 50-50. The two on the Elkhorn would be split cost 50-50 with the Lower Elkhorn, and then the Ashland camera would be split with Lower Platte South NRD. So that is what we're intending. Now, both of those entities have not gone to their board yet. They are taking both of those, this interlocal, to their boards in December. Lower Platte South, very supportive. Actually, both entities, very supportive at the staff level for this interlocal and this cost share, but we don't know what their boards will do. And just so you're aware, this motion would be to execute that agreement with USGS whether or not those entities can contribute. We do think that they both will, and they both are presenting in December, but that's just something to consider. So the prices are back on the memo. There's a $49,000 initial investment, which the USGS will contribute $23,000. We would split the costs between the other NRDs. And then maintenance is about $12,000 to $13,000 a year for the first 2 years. The USGS will contribute about $3,000, and the NRDs would split the rest. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer. These are public sites. Anyone can view them. It's HVMS is maybe. And I will definitely get the link out to everyone. Through the USGS site, you can view all of these cameras real time. They take photos every 15 minutes.
Thanks, Amanda. Mm-hmm. Director Fowler?
Amanda, a quick question. After the two-year increment for repairs and whatever, Do we have a life cycle of these types of cameras, and do we go to a Model A, Model B, or technology wise?
We don't, because really the first ones we put in are still in their first 3 year agreement. 2021 was the first cameras that we put in, so we don't. Well, I will say this: USGS has already identified some problems they were having with their transmission system and getting that type of data transmitted smoothly. So they've fixed that. So there's one thing we've worked on with them. I think we would analyze this at the end of these 3 year periods and say, how is that working for everyone? One thing I'll say, we used them a lot last year. They were great, but it didn't snow very much and nobody was really plowing. These are on bridges. So, that'll be kind of interesting to see as we move forward.
So is it a USGS works for them to do that studying and not on the NRE?
It is for them, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can we have a motion on this item first?
I'll move. No, I can make comment also.
Okay, we've got a motion. Can we have a second?
Second.
Director?
The Winslow, I particularly was interested in the Winslow site. Back in the Logan Creek runs into the Elkhorn River above Winslow, and it was in June, I can't remember how many years ago, but there was a rainfall in that basin, and the Elkhorn River rose 5 foot in 2 hours at Waterloo. We had people on the river in tubes, and the fire departments were just scrambling to get people off the river. And we're fortunate we did not lose anybody. So some of the tubers actually beached their tubes and just washed away. And the fire departments were going nuts. And we just absolutely didn't have any idea where these people were. And this is a real key. If we can see it coming, we can get the proper response by the fire departments out there ahead of time to avoid a situation like this. Additionally, then we have the ice situations. But this is really big as far as our tubing and the summer use. It could be very critical. And I do have to comment, our very first camera, Lower Platte North, I think we got one picture one day, and it crapped out. And so then we went to USGS, and they're doing a tremendous job.
Any other questions from directors on this item? Director Thompson.
Three cameras at $49,000, does that include insulation?
Yes.
So how expensive are these cameras?
They must be expensive. They're expensive. This is the installation, the transmission, the website hosting for the data. All of that's included.
Okay, but I mean, expensive what in proportion to what you just mentioned? I mean, they can't be that outrageously expensive, I wouldn't think. I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Oh, how much each?
Well, $49,000, $12,000 on top of for the maintenance.
Yeah, the maintenance is really the website, the hosting, and all the data that comes
through. How expensive are these cameras sitting out there in the open?
I don't know the exact price of the camera. I just know the installation cost.
You can ask, but I mean, it's not just the camera. It's the hardware to install the camera. It's the installation. It's the solar power. It's the battery backup.
The cameras send a picture out every 15 minutes. One shot every 15 minutes.
My point is, again, USGS fails to provide good data for us to make a decision on. Secondly, when this 2 years is done, the maintenance agreement we already have for the outrageous cost for USGS, these will fold into that?
No, so that we would have to come back with another agreement after 2025 if we wanted to continue.
So you wouldn't lump it together? This would be separate?
This would be separate.
Okay.
Anyone from the public anyone from the public wish to speak on the item? Any other questions from directors on this item?
I have a question.
Yes. Who does watch the cameras? I know you do it a lot, but is there a dedicated person here at the NRD that is responsible for watching these cameras?
I watch them a lot.
Then this person?
Okay.
The National Weather Service.
The Weather Service.
Yeah.
Do they call you then if they detect an issue, or what's the...
So we communicate constantly.
So everyone's in a
group. It's got a lot of eyes. Eyes probably more than anybody.
Right. Once the ice moves, everyone's in this collective group. Did you see this?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of communication. It's not like all right. It's not possible for the ice jam to go unnoticed then. Okay.
Well, that's not entirely true because it happened in between, you know, and it has, but. It gives us an idea. If there's moving ice, we can then go up and watch for it in key locations.
Right.
It doesn't prevent the ice from damaging.
Yeah, I'll notice from
law. Roll call.
Jack?
Yes.
Spencer?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. That completes my report.
I guess that puts me to work. Anybody need a break? Okay, seeing none, we'll call the FEL subcommittee to order. Notification of the Open Meeting Act. It is posted in the back, as stated previously, with that quorum call.
Bradley?
Yes. Or here. Davidson?
Here.
Hennison?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
And Chairman?
Yes, here. Adoption agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll
call.
Davidson?
Yes.
Thank you. Eddington?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. Proof of publication, I have it before me. Moving on to item 6, fiscal year 2022 audit, Terry Fry and Gene Geralt. I apologize if I missed that up.
That's ready.
From Bergen KDB. Good evening.
Jean is here to talk a little bit about our 22 audit tonight.
Okay, thanks, Carrie. Okay. Chairman, directors, I handed out a summary, which I apologize not getting that ahead of time to you all, but it's just to help kind of walk through the presentation, which I'll kind of make brief. Before I would start, I would say this year is a very successful audit for our team. I think Carrie did, that she's consistently done an awesome job, and Austin Thielen, who's with me here back in the back row, her and Carrie worked really well together, and what I would call a very successful and uneventful audit, which is I'm sure what you all would like to hear. So we essentially have, as part of our audit, there's four letters or four reports that are included in the audit report. on pages 1 through 4 is the audit of the financial statements, and that's the most important thing. That's what's required by state statute. So the financial statements, the information in there is really all your information. These four letters is what is our reports on your financial statements, on your information. So the audit report included is a little different language this year than it's been in the past. This audit standards that were updated to change the reporting and kind of tried to make clarification. The bottom line is it's the same report you've had in the past, which is what we call an unmodified report, meaning meaning it's unqualified, saying that as a result of our audit, we did not identify any reasons that these financial statements are not presented fairly in all material respects, the financial position and operations of the district. Included in this packet also is information that's beyond the actual financial statements. And so there's some language in there that talks about what the limitations on our opinion on the supplemental information. And so there's certain information where we provided what we call in relation to opinion, meaning this information is correct in all material specs in relation to the financial statements, and some information we are not opining on. So those are probably technical things you're not all that interested in, but they are part of the audit report itself. The key thing there is that these financial statements are presented in accordance with general accepted accounting principles, and our audit says, in our opinion, that they are presented that way. The second report is on page 5758. As part of our audit, we also look at your internal controls over financial reporting. We don't audit your internal controls, and internal controls are very important for a lot of reasons, for accuracy, completeness, fraud, just errors, irregularities, those type of things. So we don't really audit your internal controls, but as part of our audit, we gain an understanding and we test those controls. What this report says is that as part of our audit, our review internal controls did not identify any material weakness or significant deficiencies, meaning your internal controls are in really good shape. The other part of our audit is we have to look for compliance with laws and regulations, just general knowledge of what the laws of Nebraska and RDs are required. Again, we don't design our audit to test for those, but as part of our audit, what that report says is we did not identify any areas of noncompliance. And then the third bullet point there that I have under that is we also required by state auditor to test and review your compliance with the Nebraska Budget Act, and we did not identify any issues of noncompliance as part of your budget. The third part of the audit includes your audit over the federal funds. So this year, or the year ending June 30 of 22, you received $1.3 million of federal funds that you received and expended. You actually expended those monies. And so with that, we have to test specific programs. So this year, we tested the Emergency Watershed Protection Program, is what we call a major program, and we do specific tests as outlined by the GAO office. And so as part of that, we issue an opinion saying we did these specific procedures that were required to test, and we did not identify any errors in noncompliance, and the system was complied with in all material respects. The fourth report is a report at the very back of the audit, and this is just required communications in an audit that goes through what your responsibilities, what our responsibilities are, if there are any difficulties with management, or is there any outside consultants we use, a lot of those things that are required to be communicated to you. Essentially, important information, but there's nothing in there that really warrants specific intention by all of you. Everything was done well. Congratulate Carrie again, and that bullet point there says no adjusting entries. What that means is Carrie gives us, or we provide access, she gives us and provides access to all of your financial information, and then we audit it, and then did we make any adjustments? And the answer is no. And I can tell you that there's a small percentage of governmentalities in Nebraska where that is the case. So kudos and congratulations to Carrie and her team for, again, this year not having us to make any adjustments to present to audit the financial statements. I listed some highlights as I see them as an outside auditor on what are the financial highlights of the district that I noted below. I think for the most part, you would as you read through those, you'll see, very strongly, I think the district made progress and continues to be in a very strong financial position. The only item in there that would say, maybe that did not improve our financial position is just the debt in relation to your valuation. And that did go up a bit as you increased the debt in relation to your valuation slightly. You're still at approximately just under 10%, and that's kind of the nature of what you're doing. Obviously, you all know you're issuing a lot of bonds to make major improvements to help the taxpayers and the citizens of the area. So But other than that, most every other ratio that I would look at would be positive financially. So, we appreciate the opportunity to come and perform the audit, and certainly available to answer any questions or dive further into any details if you so choose, Chairman.
Thank you. Can we get a motion on the floor?
I move.
Okay. Discussion from the general public.
Comments?
Directors? Yep. Did you have a comment?
No.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
That's amazing work. No journal adjustments. That's, especially given recent history through the Nebraska government. Thank you.
Comment about Carrie, the excellent job she's been doing for us the last number of years. Tremendous job, Carrie. Thank you. With that, roll call.
Pennington?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Item 7. Douglas County buyout purchase agreement, Anderson property, Lori.
Good evening. So today we have the next property that we are purchasing in King Lake. We received grant funding after the floods of 2019 to purchase flood-damaged homes at their fair market value prior to damage. And so we have 5907 North 242nd Street. This is in King Lake, again. The property was appraised for $56,000. The owners did not receive any assistance from FEMA after the flood, so they are entitled to the full appraised value of that property. As a reminder, this grant covers 75% of the cost, and so the district share of the purchase of the property is $14,000. And with that, I can answer any questions.
Any comments from general public? Can we get a
motion on the board?
Second.
Thank you. Comments from general public? Directors? I went out and looked at this property yesterday, took some photos of it, 57,000, right on. No other comments? Roll call.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
Henningsen?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. Thank you. Item 8, no name, high ground easement purchase, lot 45, Kohoi.
Good evening, gentlemen. Pleased to bring this to you tonight. Last month, you might recall, the board actually took action to file an eminent domain on this property. It's owned by the Kohoi family. They later, after this eminent domain process went out to them. What's that? No executive session? Yep. Okay. Anyway, the people finally came around, and this triggered them to respond to the eminent domain. They said, we really want to resolve this. No need to go to court over this. We'll sign it for the appraised number. So they signed a purchase agreement for the appraised number, which is $1,700. And so it's unapproved lots, a vacant lot, basically. But real positive experience for our negotiator. But unfortunately, all throughout the summer, they just didn't respond to whatever we did, calls, mail type thing. They didn't respond. They're an older couple, I understand. And I think that's probably part of it. It's just that they didn't really understand fully what was going on. So, but fortunately, we have in front of you tonight a motion to approve this purchase agreement that's been signed by them. And would recommend that you do that. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have in that regard.
Can we get a motion on the floor, please?
So moved. Second.
Thank you. Comments from general public? Directors? Hearing none, roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
Henningsen?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. Thank you. Item 9, land acquisition, dam site 7. Ian and How sure are you going?
No, it'll be Ian.
Okay.
Do we do the summary first and then go into? Okay. Okay.
Not right now.
I'll wait. Give 1 second. Yeah. So, hello and good afternoon again, everyone. So, the subject for this agenda item is land acquisition for Dam Site 7. Dam Site 7 is a reservoir that the district has been planning, permitting, and conducting design work on since 2017. Preliminary design was completed in 2018, and just for your background, Exhibit 1 shows the proposed layout and some of the features that will be included in Dam Site 7. For this discussion, I want to focus more on the second exhibit, if we can jump to that one. That shows the land rights at Dam Site 7. One more, yes. So this memo is concerned with the portion shaded in red there. That's the land that we hope to acquire. In November of 2018, a public hearing was held for that portion of land. I'm reading the next memo. Let me jump. In October 2021 and January 2022, my mistake, public hearings were held for the two tracts of land there that comprise that total portion of red. And in March of this year, 2022, an appraisal was completed with the values determined to be $43,000 per acre for the Logaman parcel, which I believe is the parcel on the right up there, part of that shaded red. And it was determined to be $51,000 per acre for the Mueller parcel, which is to the left of that red shaded area. Okay. I'm going to invite Mr. Larry Jovan to come up and speak on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board.
Could you state your name and address, please?
Yes, Larry Jovan, 11440 West Center Road, appearing on behalf of the sellers of this property. The first one is Morgan Ridge, LLC, and the second one is Kempton Creek, LLC. They're two different sellers in this particular case. They're all Hubble companies by the land company, so this land is currently being developed. So I should take them independently because they are two separate agreements. They have kind of two separate sets of facts. That works for you, the chair, and the board. Also with me is Dave Boatman and Justin Knapp, and also of Hubble. And then also Jeff LaMontagne of B&A Consulting, in case there's any engineering or questions regarding the legal descriptions, et cetera. So I'll take the first one is Morgan Ridge, LLC. That contract is in front of you, I believe. That is what we refer to as the Logaman parcel. And back in April of 16th of 2021, Hubble, or Morgan Ridge LLC, put that under contract, and just kind of to get your the kind of the critical time frames of what happened on that particular parcel, and then we'll get into the next one second. So the contract was entered into between Darrell Logaman and his wife and Morgan Ridge LLC on April 16th, 2021. Under Nebraska law, the way it works is once you enter into a purchase agreement, the buyer ends up with equitable title to the property, and the seller merely retains legal title to secure the balance of the purchase price. So once the purchase agreement is entered into, there's an equitable interest in that property. So at that time, the buyer, Morgan Ridge LLC, had an equitable interest in the property. So the purchase price under that contract was $38,000 per acre, and early on, after the contract was executed, we met with the NRD, and of course they expressed their interest in acquiring this property for Dam Site 7. And so on that basis, you know, and Darrell Logaman, for example, was not going to sell this in parcels. He wanted to sell the entirety. So Hubble or Morgan Ridge LLC was required to buy the entirety of the development at the $38,000 an acre, which was an agreed upon price, understanding that there would be an appraisal done at some point in the future. So There was an appraisal done on March 28th of 2022, and this was commissioned by the NRD. This is the NRD's appraisal, not Morgan Ridge LLC's appraisal. And the NRD determined that they were going to need to purchase 22.494 acres of the Logaman property from Morgan Ridge LLC. So that established the number of acres, and then the appraisal was done on March 28th, 2022, and it came back at $43,000 per acre. So contract price, $38,000 an acre. Appraised value, as commissioned by the NRD's appraiser, $43,000 an acre. That particular transaction closed September 30th, 2022. So the appraisal was done March 28th of 2022, you know, several months, obviously, before closing. And the interesting part about that is between the time the contract was executed and it was actually closed, a year, 5 months, and 14 days elapsed and passed. And so what I talked about earlier about the buyer obtaining an equitable interest in the property, by all rights, they really should be entitled to the increase in the fair market value of that property. And conversely, I suppose, if the appraisals would have come back at less than $38,000, I would assume that the NRD board would be saying, well, maybe we should be paying less than your contract price. But in any event, I think the contract price is really irrelevant here. And in respect to the time frame that we're talking about, the appraised value is really what's important, and that's the critical fact here. It's the fair market value at the time that they closed. And because they had an equitable interest in this property for a year and 6 months, they should be entitled to the benefit of any increase in valuation. And what I would say about that is this property is being purchased or was purchased and closed with the idea of subdividing, rezoning, and developing this property as a single-family residential development, which it is in the process of being developed now. We are in the process of going through a final plat with the City of Bennington. And so what happened here is we were unable to develop this property for single-family residential purposes because why the dam site is going to go there and we can't locate our lots or our property there. But had this purchase agreement not intervened, I would assume that the NRD board would be acquiring this property from Daryl Logaman at the appraised value because there would be no intervening contract price that would somehow impair or discount what the appraised value is. So our position is that really we can't develop this property, obviously, because it's been designated as a dam site. We were required to buy it. We had an agreed-upon price with the seller for $38,000 an acre. Turns out the appraised value came in higher. We think that we should have the benefit of that since we've held it, that interest in that property for, you know, a year and a half. So that's with respect to that particular development. I don't know if you have any questions on that one, if you want to take them individually and then get to the next one, but I'll be able to go a little quicker on that one because it's the same argument, just different time frames between contract, closing, appraisal, that kind of thing. So I don't know if you have any questions on the Morgan Ridge LLC transaction.
Anyone? Continue.
Okay. So that will get us to the next one, which is also Dam Site 7. This is referred to as the Mueller property. The seller in this particular case to the NRD is Kempton Creek LLC. And in that particular case, the contract was entered into on September 29th, 2020. And the purchase price, again, was $38,000 an acre for the entirety, because it wasn't going to be parceled out and sold separately. They weren't reserving that portion that was going to be purchased by the NRD. They were forcing Kempton Creek LLC to buy the entirety. So that property was appraised. And again, this property is 24.39 acres. That was determined that the NRD needed the 24.39 acres for the purposes of Dam Site 7. And so that property appraised on March 28th of 2022 at $51,000 an acre. And this transaction closed 2 days later on March 30th of 2022. So talking about relevancy as far as timing, the appraisal came in 2 days prior to the actual closing. Now, the closing was on a per acre purchase price of the $38,000 an acre. But again, the NRD's appraisal that was commissioned by the NRD came back at $51,000 an acre. And again, obtaining an equitable interest in the property for or a year and a half prior, we feel that, any upside to the value, just as if there, conversely, if there was a downside, if the appraisal would have come in at $35,000 an acre, I would suggest that the NRD board would probably be saying you're only entitled to $35,000 an acre because that's the fair market value of the property. I think the precedent here in the policy to me is political subdivision should pay fair market value for property. And some purchase price that was a year and a half prior to that shouldn't discount that fair market value because it is the value that it is at the time that the appraisal comes back. So that's really our position, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And look, no one is trying to take advantage of the NRD by any stretch. I mean, this, again, was property that was acquired for the purposes of subdividing, zoning, and developing it into a single-family residential subdivision. We were not able to do that with respect to this 24.39 acres, just like the other one that I talked about, and respect the taxpayer dollars and everything that you have to deal with. I represent a lot of political subdivisions myself, sanitary and improvement districts. But the cost of going through some kind of inverse condemnation or condemnation proceeding or waiting to acquire down the road, I would suggest that the value is probably only going to get more costly down the road, and it's preventing a development from going forward because we can't do anything here, because Bennington would say, well, gee, you can't plat that if the NRD wants it, which actually really amounts to a regulatory taking by the NRD and Bennington if we can't do anything with the property for a number of years. So we would like to put this to bed, get the agreements executed that are before you tonight, and move on and have a great development and hopefully a great dam site. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. And like I said, I have others here from Hubble to answer questions as well.
Can we get a motion on the floor? Do you want to go to exec?
I think we should go into executive session.
Okay, can we get a motion to go into exec?
Just a point of order. Do we stay here?
No. So moved.
Please.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
not in the session, but stay here.
Right, yeah. Yeah, okay, thank you.
That's what that'd be helpful.
All right, thank you.
Can we get a motion? Okay.
So moved.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
No. What am I voting on? Going into executive session? Because I'm going to have to leave shortly. Okay, yes.
Benson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
And?
Yes. Can I get a motion to go back into the regular session, please?
So move.
Roll call.
Mason?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
And
yes. We have a staff recommendation. Is there a motion? Is there a motion on staff recommendation? Hearing none, the staff recommendation will not be heard. If any other recognized director,
we probably want to have the staff go back and see if they can come up with a suitable resolution.
Okay. So we can just direct staff to do that. We don't need to really put that in a.
I don't think we need a motion. Just.
Okay, so assuming that we're in agreement, we'll just tell staff to go ahead and continue to negotiate. That concludes our discussion, and we'll move on to next agenda item, which is agenda item 10.
I recommend that the board goes to executive session for number 10.
Okay. Okay, motion to go into executive session.
So move.
Second. Roll call.
Duffy?
Yes.
Henderson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. Can I get a motion to come out of exec, please?
So move.
Second somewhere?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call.
Davidson? Sorry. Henningsen?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Yes. Can we get a motion, please?
I move that we go with staff recommendation on this item.
Is there a second? I'll second it. Any further discussion?
Roll call. Henningsen?
No.
McCormick?
No.
Bradley?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. Motion fails.
50-50.
At this point, any further business?
I had a point of just a parliamentary procedure question. If a committee person leaves and then you end up with an even vote, committee member supposed to step in there?
Brad was the alternate.
So Thursday it can be.
You'll take care of it Thursday.
Okay.
Thursday. You'll take care of it Thursday.
Just bring it up fresh and have a vote and we're
got
done.
Got it.
Hearing no other business, we're standing to it.